Hi, this is a podcast produced by IDEA, the Irish Development Education Association. It's an interview between Matthias Fiedler, Director of IDEA, and Dr. Lorna Gold, Policy and Advocacy Manager at TROCRA. The interview is about Leading Edge 2020, Critical Thinking for the Future of Development, which was research published by TROCRA in 2011. The podcast was produced for the IDEA Summer School, which took place in July 2011.
Lorna, thank you very much for agreeing to be interviewed briefly on the Leading Edge 2020 for the IDEA Summer School. And probably best if we start, if you could give a short background of the report. As I've explained in my email, the participants of the Summer School, they will have the document in front of them and hopefully have read parts of it. So there's no need to go into great detail, but if you could just give the kind of broad background of the report and a little bit of the about the scope of it, who was interviewed and what was done.
Okay, thanks, Matthias.
Yeah.
Firstly, I mean, it's a great opportunity. Thanks for giving me this chance to feed into the summer school. I really appreciate having the opportunity to feed into the development education sector and looking at how things are going ahead. The Leading Edge report, as people, if they have it in front of them, they'll see, is actually the third report in a series that TROCRA has produced. The first two reports were done in 2000 and 2005, and they were internal documents for TROCRA, designed to look at the future context and horizon scanning the environment out there for international development. And then with this third report, with the funding of Irish Aid, we decided to make it a much bigger project and to make it a publicly available document. Again, with the same function, looking at the future horizon, what's coming down the tracks for international development, and how we need to adapt and change in that changed environment. So in order to do that, we interviewed 87 people. From a really wide range of sectors. If people look at page 6 of the report, they'll see the full list of organisations and the people who participated in the research. These were people from from academia, from civil society, from government officials, a cross-section of people from the north, and from the south. And in fact, if people look at the first appendix in the report, which starts on page 73, it outlines exactly how we went about the research. And there's a useful table there as well that shows you all the different organisations that participated in it.
How did you determine the people? Were there people who had participated in the previous two reports, or
that was our starting point. Our starting point was the people who participated in the previous report, so we could kind of track their thinking, and then we also then got leads from those people and from other contacts with TROCRA to look at who else we might interview. We accept it's not the be-all and end-all of people thinking about these issues, and there are limitations to it in terms of the balance between north and south. But
yeah,
we feel that it's good enough in terms of the number of people we asked and the breadth of the people who we questioned. So,
yeah,
I mean,
also,
I think...
it's also a good... just looking at the list, it's also a good cross-section of people working in academia, people working in the civil society sector, not just development, but also environmental groups. So it seems to be a good cross-section of people that you got for the report.
Yeah, and that was our intention.
Mm.
So then in terms of the report itself, it has three main sections. There's... Well, if you exclude the introduction, which is just a summary of the report itself, but it's three main key sections. The first is on global trends, looking at the five big trends that are going to shape development in the coming years. The second section is on international development frameworks, so it's more looking at the policy context for development and how this might shift in the coming decades. And then the third section is really looking at international non-governmental organisations like CHOCRA, like CONCERN, like the organisations that would fund from the north work in the Global South. So it really puts up some challenges to these organisations. And I think overall, looking at the report, what comes out most strongly in this report as compared to the others is the challenge to the INGO sector, and we need to change what we do in order to address the challenges.
Yeah.
So this report is a public report, and it's really designed, the way we designed it is to help other organisations to use the material in it. There's burning questions at the end of each section which address some, pose some food for thought and some key questions to ask, and then it will feed into planning processes within CHOCRA. For example, we've just used it in a planning process around our future policy and advocacy strategy, and we'll be doing that in the coming months. That's an overview of the report itself.
Okay, thank you very much for that. If I could go back to those global trends that the report has identified, you've mentioned there are five. It's climate change, shifting geopolitics, demographic change, natural resource pressure, and the whole issue of inequality and how that is widening. And I'm sure you're aware of that debate that is taking shape now in terms of beyond 2015 scenarios. We're coming to the 2015 deadline of the MDGs, and there's a lot of discussion now in the development sector around what's next, and those three options that seem to be on the table, kind of more of the same, or kind of a revised version of the MDGs, focusing on only a few, or adding some others, or the last option that seems to be on the table is this kind of broader, more radically different approach to development. And the question around those global trends that you've identified, and or that the report has identified, do you think does this report give an answer, or not an answer, but provide some pointers in that debate?
Well, it's a very good question, and I think, I mean, for me, the first thing to do looking at this report is to take a big step back from the MDG framework discussion in the first instance, and I'll explain what I mean. I think what the key trends in the report point out is the fact that these five key trends of climate change, geopolitics, resources, demographics, and inequality, they're all deeply interconnected with each other. So in a sense, you look at them individually, but they also have to be looked at as an interconnected set of issues. And what they're really saying to us is that what is happening out there is a paradigm shift. It's a paradigm shift in terms of the model of the underlying model of development, and how we define development needs to change in order to address the big issues that are going to face us in the next decade. So you look at climate change. It's not enough just to address climate change through the climate change negotiations. There's a big underlying issue around sustainability, around the inequalities that are perpetuating climate change. But how do you address inequalities and address climate change at the same time? So address poverty and address climate change. It's also about addressing wealth and poverty. So so when you look at these issues, they're deeply interconnected. Demographic change is the same. How do you address the rising populations in middle-income countries, for example, and also address the issue of environmental sustainability? Yeah. So I guess the biggest challenge that comes out there is that there needs to be a more inclusive, sustainable model of international development. And it really poses the question to me around what is that model and how do we actually get that model into the centre of the, I guess, the mainstream in our thinking around international development. It, in some ways, takes us back to debates that were happening in the early 1990s around sustainable development. And the kind of the whole issue of sustainable development in some ways lost its way in the 1990s and into the 2000s. It was almost sidelined as that's an environmental issue. But if you actually go back and look at it, sustainable development is actually based on the three pillars of social, environmental, and economic sustainability, and they go hand in hand.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of the trends that you've identified, just as you said, taking a position taking an action even in one of those areas always determines a position in the other, if you know
yeah.
what I mean. Like
yeah.
if you do something on natural resources, you can only do that, and it has knock-on effects in all the other trends. So they are deeply
yeah.
interconnected. What also strikes me about those global trends is that comparing it to, for example, one of the answers that the international development sector was trying to give through the MDGs. Through the MDGs, there's a very clear, divide, a north-south divide, 7 goals for the south, 1 for the north, or something like that. Yeah? So
yeah.
that notion of that development mainly happens in the south.
Yes.
What strikes me about all those trends is that they are actually truly global.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so in terms of what it means for us, it also means that the development challenge, those trends, for me, put the development challenges to the north and to the south, and it kind of overcomes that north-south divide almost a little bit.
Yeah, and I think as well as the north-south, it's very much, we see, and if you look at those challenges, that there are new players. In, are they north or are they south? The BRIC countries are Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and also South Africa, which are powerhouses of the global economy and are going to be extremely powerful players in the coming decades. And I think one of the things that really strikes me looking at this future decade is what I've called an unholy alliance that's emerging in terms of a new kind of radical development model, which is very, I would say, retrograde, and it takes us back to a model which is based on growth as development. If you're following the debates at the EU level at the moment, or in any of the international negotiations around development, it's quite worrying, the trend, because what you have is cash-strapped countries in Northern Europe who are looking for ways to fund international development without impinging on their own finances.
Yeah.
And what you then have is cash-rich countries with surpluses like China, and China in particular, but also Saudi, the Middle Eastern oil-rich states, who are looking to spend money in developing countries. And what happens there is that there's an alliance in terms of the future of development is very much focused around growth, economic growth, and that the future of the MDGs, and this is where this comes, the future of achieving these goals is actually brought down to the level of using aid, using finance as the way, as a lever for achieving more growth in these countries. And that's hugely, if that trend continues, it's a big step back for us, because it's a step much further away from the kind of development agenda that we've seen in the past decade, which is focused around poverty alleviation and provision of basic services. And it's also a step much further away from the environmental sustainability agenda. And basically what it's saying is if we sort the growth issue out, everything else will fall into place. So, I mean, I think that in the next few...
You could argue that if you don't, on a growth, kind of a development policies that are continuing to be to be based on that growth idea will not be able to actually work within those five trends that you have, or successfully work in those five trends that you've identified.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have, like, it's almost like now in the coming year or so, the battle lines are going to be drawn, if you like to think of it as a battle, where you have governments in Europe, fairly right-wing governments, coming to power, and you have the powerhouses of China and India and Brazil, and they have one thing in common, and that's to promote this growth, this new growth philosophy, within the poorest countries, and it's something that, I mean, it's very unrealistic, and it's also challenges us in terms of that issue around what comes after the MDGs. I mean, if you take it in that context, the MDGs actually look very good on compared to what could be coming down the tracks, but at the same time, the MDGs are not the answer either. And it's actually about a bigger question of what is the underlying model of development, and how do we safeguard a model that respects international human rights and also puts the issues of sustainability at the heart of the future of international development.
Yeah. Okay. the report. Also, as you've mentioned at the very beginning, it identifies those five trends, and then it goes into 10 key challenges that are that are identified for the future of international NGOs. Yeah? And there is now, from a development education perspective, there's a clear number 8 engage with their own society. So that's claim that NGOs have to engage more with their own constituency, and that whole idea of that is in that finding frames research that NGOs have probably lost a little bit their connection to their supporters or to their members or to their own society. So that's a clear one where, if you read it from a development education perspective, the report, you can clearly say, yeah, we fit into that.
Yeah.
But my question would be probably more on, apart from this very obvious link in the challenge number 8, do you see a role for development education or development educators in addressing the other challenges that are posed by the report?
Yeah, I mean it's a difficult question. I'm not in the development education sector, so I probably see things here that people know a lot better than me. But I'll have a stab at maybe three ways I think that development education could really support or could address some of these bigger issues. I think, I mean, first and foremost, the way in which development education teaches people to think critically about the world around them, and then use that as a way to lead to action. I think that's absolutely fundamental to addressing some of these issues, getting people to think differently about how their relationship on a daily basis with the bigger issues we're facing in terms of sustainability, in terms of international development. So you used the phrase earlier, it's not them and us. It's not about some development's not something that happens over there. All of the issues that are highlighted in this report are interconnected,
yeah,
and they're global issues. And many of the sources of the problems actually start with our actions here and what we can do. So I think continuing along that focusing very much on the kinds of issues where people feel empowered to take action, whether it's as action as consumers, action as political activists, as citizens. It's that whole thing of finding the ways to so that people can actually take action in their daily lives is really key.
Yeah, which links it to that whole thing what we've discussed in terms of the trends, that idea that the growth ideology needs to be challenged as well.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I mean, I think the second one for me, and this is where my knowledge of DevEd might be a little bit limited, but I did have some knowledge of it in the past few years, and that's the whole kind of division that's come up between those working for sustainable development and those working for development education. And I think that we need to almost have a dialogue and to start to think about these issues as one and the same. And that sustainable development and how we reflect on what is sustainable development is really, really important in the next few years. Mm. Sustainable development is not an environmental issue. It's far from environmental. It's been boxed into the environment side of things. But it's those three pillars and how the connections between them. And what is the vision of sustainability that we're trying to promote or trying to draw out from the work that we're doing. I think that we need to address that issue, and we need to look at how it kind of connects with our work around human rights. So, I mean, that's probably one for further reflection.
Yeah, but it's an important one, because very often, as often in the NGO sector, there is a little bit of a, I wouldn't say tension, but there is a competition. Education for sustainable development education, human rights education. They are all going for the same pots. They are all going for the same curriculum links. They are all going for.
Yeah.
So that idea that there needs to be a dialogue, because those three issues are so closely interconnected.
Which leads me to the third challenge, and I think it's connected just to that as well, but it's a bigger one. I think that over the next few years, there's going to be a need for civil society to really form unprecedented coalitions and alliances. So in some ways, I mean, NGOs are faced with the same issue, but it's basically how do, given the forces that are at work in terms of this different paradigm of growth and development, how do we make the links with like-minded organisations in a way that overcomes that competitiveness and forces us to actually face the fact that we are all calling for the same things, but we're so divided in amongst ourselves that we often are kind of end up inadvertently competing in the same space. So it's a real challenge to ourselves to look at how we can form alliances, and the likes of different DevEd organisations forming alliances with CHOCRA, and so that we're able to feed into a much bigger civil society movement, and we see that what unites us is more strong than all the different things that divide us, because we could always point to that, but we need to fight. And I think that using the opportunities, political opportunities that are going to present themselves in the next few years, for example Rio Plus 20 next year, or the review of the Millennium Development Goals, that'll start in 2013. Ireland also has the EU presidency in 2013, so making that issue really at the centre of the Irish presidency of the EU as well. So that would be my third thing, is around building alliances.
Great. Good challenges. I like them, and I'm sure that they will be all on our agenda during the summer school, because those are key challenges for us as a sector as well, in that area. Okay, Lorna, I don't know if you want to say some final words or something like that. Otherwise, I've been through my list of questions that I had for you.
No, that would be about it. I'd just encourage people to read the report and
we will.
feel free to use it in their own context, and We can provide also the graphics. I think they're up on the web actually.
Okay.
But if people find those cartoons useful in their own context, they're more than welcome to use them.
Perfect.
So it's there for everybody to use.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sana, for the interview. And I'll
You're welcome.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.